very warm welcome to Political Economy with Shweta Punj. If there's one story out of India that's often spoken about for its convenience and for its innovation, it's India's e-commerce play. E-commerce and UPI are the two big success stories that are often quoted by people who visit India or who have moved to India from elsewhere in the world to talk about the phenomenal leap that this industry has taken, and it has made lives of urban Indians very, very convenient. Digital payments and digital shopping. Today we are talking about digital shopping, e-commerce. We chose this topic this week because Minister Piyush Goyal raised some concerns regarding the e-commerce play in India. He said that these companies indulged in predatory pricing, which means that they are undercutting the small guys and selling us products at a cheaper price. It is having a spillover effect on the small mom and pop stores that make for a majority of India. Well, to understand in greater detail about the concerns that have been raised by Minister Goyal, about the growth of the e-commerce story, about its future in India, and most importantly, there is an e-commerce policy that's in the works. What should that policy entail? I have with me a veteran of the retail space, Mr. Arvind Singhal of Technopak. He has documented and he has been part of India's retail story a lot before India even had understood the concept of modern retail. He's been tracking India's retail growth since the 1980s. Mr. Singhal, thank you very much for joining us today.
It is indeed, and veteran is the right word to use. I'm so old now, I've seen some changes as far as retailing in India is concerned, probably a bit more than many others may have cared to.
Right. So from the mom and pop Kirana stores to the big glitzy malls that we see now, and then now you have, 10-minute deliveries, and you can order just about anything at home. In fact, this morning, it happens every morning in my house. So there's something that's missing, and you just blink at it, and that's it. Or any other online app delivery. Mr. Singhal, why we are having this conversation today is because the minister raised very important issues in a statement that he made 2 days ago. And then he's come out and said that though e-commerce is very important, however, having said that, its exponential growth has led to areas of concern. So one, I want to ask you, as someone who's tracked this space, how do you read into this statement?
So what the minister meant, I think only minister knows is better. I think we have to acknowledge that he is also a political persona. He has to cater into specific constituencies which might constitute a significant vote bank for him. And I think one has to give credit to the fact that all politicians obviously have agendas which are not necessarily seen as, black and white. Having said so, I'll just make a couple of opening comments. You talked about UPI, you talked about e-commerce success. I would say in the larger sense, in today's world, India's success on digital itself, and the Prime Minister himself talks about digital India, is something we genuinely can be proud of. I think there are so many applications of digital technologies, whether your passport's upgradation, whether it is your driving license, you're talking about Digi Yatra now at the airports. I mean, there are multiple facets where digitization is making the life of an average Indian much better, more convenient, reducing interface with the government as such in this case, or reducing interface with other intermediaries there. So to that extent, e-commerce actually serves a significantly higher purpose than just buying and selling of merchandise. I think e-commerce is a much bigger play for India. And having said so, globally also, I think digital is the way the world is moving in. It is also true, to support the minister on one count at least, a lot of countries in the world, including the USA, including UK, Europe, EU, are concerned about monopolies.
Correct.
And we have seen actions being specifically taken against Amazon, Google, antitrust. and a few other such entities where dominance is being discouraged. So I think we have to keep that aspect in mind for sure, that, you know, we do not want in India any kind of digital monopolies to emerge which could be disadvantaged. But I think let's talk about retail specifically. Shweta, you talked about using Blinkit or whatever this morning in my house. Half the time of all of us in our family is spent on OTPs, you know, about some delivery being done or not. But I think we forget that India lives actually way beyond the top 20, 30 cities. Distribution in India beyond top 20, 30, I'm saying not even 200 cities, and I'm not even talking about rural India, is still very primitive. Let us not look at Hindustan Unilever and a few other companies who penetrate India much more. Now, this is a thing from our consumers living in those relatively smaller cities where they are compelled to buy merchandise which they may not want. They are denied choice. And frankly speaking, even pricing is something which is not necessarily adhered to when it comes to, let's say, MRP or whatever else there. So to that extent, I think it was probably an overreaction to say that there is predatory pricing going on in India or it is causing harm to the society at large. I would tend to argue that, look, predatory pricing has got a simple, universally accepted definition when you're selling below cost. Selling at a lower margin is certainly beneficial to the consumers. And this is what my understanding is, that whether it is a Blinkit, whether it is a Flipkart, whether it is an Amazon, finally there are sellers who are sacrificing margin to get a share of the customer's wallet. And let the government or any entity like a competition commission probe into allegations that somebody is selling below cost. And then the second question comes in about dominance. I think, you know, we want to educate our viewers on dominance, but I think it's in the context.
Okay, let's go one by one. Let's go one by one, Mr. Singhal. I don't want to interrupt you, but let's just go one by one. So, let's begin with the growth of the India e-commerce space. And the fact is, and we were discussing this yesterday, this has happened at a time when we still don't have an e-commerce policy. So I want to get a sense of, what has enabled this ecosystem to grow at the speed at which it has grown. And secondly, the e-commerce policy that has been in the works, what according to you should that be including to ensure that there is no predatory pricing and to ensure that there is no domination and there are no anti-competitive practices, but it should also ensure that the sector continues to grow at the rate it has grown until now.
So Shweta, like I had mentioned also yesterday when we talked about, I'm very, very nervous about this term policy, because basically more often than not, it actually becomes very complex legalese, which only complicates the situation for everybody, including consumers, sellers, operators, investors, founders, and so on and so forth. To the best of my knowledge, no country in the world has a policy, if I use the word, for e-commerce or for retail for that matter. We are probably the only country which wants to create a policy framework. You know, e-commerce is something which is very rapidly evolving. It is not in steady state. You cannot create a policy which is so dynamic that every year it changes simply because the technology has moved on, the society has moved on there. Okay. What we need is guardrails. So what are these guardrails? The first and most important guardrail, not only in terms of e-commerce, but any industry, is dominance. We do not want monopolies or duopolies or oligopolies to emerge, because sector after sector after sector, they can only harm the society. We have a competition commission of India, which therefore should be empowered to learn, train itself, and make sure that there are no such monopolistic forces that are emerging in the country, which could be harmful. So that is one guardrail. I'm fully in agreement with you that any policy, use the word, should only talk about guardrails. So that is one aspect. Second aspect is something is very important in the context of predatory pricing. That was the term being used there. No dominant player, if any, should be allowed to sell goods at below the cost, which therefore hurts other companies who may not be having the financial deep pockets to compete on a price war, which is selling below cost.
Hmm.
And that has to be empirically proven, not by some local shopkeeper trying to make a statement that, look, somebody's selling below the cost. No, evidence-based is something you should be looking at. There again, the Ministry of Consumer Affairs, along with the Competition Commission, should be empowered that any such allegation which emerges will be examined. And whosoever has made this allegation has to give evidence of that. Now, as long as we these two guardrails, the only third guardrail I will think about is from consumers' point of view. Consumers deserve to get the product they have bought. E-commerce platforms allow, unfortunately, sellers who could be selling duplicates or fakes. And this is a challenge which Amazon and others face, even in the USA. This is where, again, I think the guardrail should be that any instance of any fraudulent activity in terms of fake products, you know, they have to be delisted from the platform and blacklisted as far as the sellers are concerned. Beyond this, I can't think what other policy. Yeah, fourth part of guardrail, if I may add that, should be the consumer data protection, which I think is as a GDPR becomes very critical. Each of the platforms which collect data from consumers have to make sure that that data is not shared with any third entity in a manner which is harmful to the privacy of the customers or consumers. And this is the challenge which Google and Amazon have faced in some of the markets outside India about data protection. Beyond this, I don't think we need a policy which requires 5 years in the making, which I am told there, and countless number of discussions. Common sense, I think, should prevail in this.
So you're saying that we already have different mechanisms to check dominance or anti-competitive practices. We need a strong data bill to ensure that global companies are held accountable. Not only global, national companies, domestic companies also held accountable to what they decide to. All companies to decide to do what they, to ensure that our data is protected. Mr. Singhal, I just want to understand from you. This growth of e-commerce in India, how has that altered the retail landscape, you know, in terms of building supply chains, warehouses? What does an e-commerce business really entail at the grassroots level? What is the kind of employment that we are talking about? What is the kind of business process? Now, are we saying that, say, a company like a Blinkit or Zepto or whoever, they essentially buy in bulk, they store it in warehouses, and then they sell it at competitive prices in the convenience of your homes? So what is the impact of that practice on a small retailer, on a kirana shop? Or so am I taking away someone's livelihood if I am buying from an e-commerce platform?
So we have to look into the larger good of society. We have to look into that job creation. Any technological intervention will create some degree of disruption for sure. So to say that there is no job losses would be not fair. But at the same time, we have to see that where the jobs are also being created because of the e-commerce ecosystem. And by the way, it is still in a very nascent stage, Shweta. The penetration of e-commerce in e-tailing, in merchandise, I'm not talking about the services like banking services or other services, is still about 10%, no more. We still need, other countries, developed countries have reached up to 35 to 40%. We have a long way to go in terms of seeing that e-commerce is becoming the dominant channel through which Indian consumers are shopping. Now, within this ecosystem, very new categories of jobs are being created. You pointed out, when you're looking to logistics, logistics is not only just warehouses. Logistics is also the last mile, which, we see people delivery being done in top 100, 200 cities. Hundreds of thousands of individual gig workers, you can call them, make their livelihood doing the last mile delivery. When you're looking into movement of goods from one part of country to another part of country, it again creates a velocity in terms of movement of logistics. And as a result, more jobs are created there. When you look into the back-end support, I mean, the tech support which gives a Blinkit or a Zepto to deliver in 7 to 10 minutes. The underpinning is technology, you know. Somebody is writing the code. Somebody is writing the code. Somebody is maintaining the code. There are countless number of people. When I say countless, I'm not saying infinitely large number, but countless means those numbers are not counted in jobs. The packaging, you know, for example, when you're delivering goods to somebody's home, you create a layer of packaging on top of that. Those are producers, you know, which create that kind of micro enterprises and so on and so forth. So this ecosystem has to be studied, I think, again, unemotionally rather than emotionally there. But my belief would be that we are probably creating significantly larger number of net jobs as opposed to job losses.
Okay, so but is there data to show that with the explosion of e-commerce, we've seen the small Kirana guy, taking a hit? Do we have any data on if those kind of shops have closed, or are people opting to shop online? Are they ordering their groceries from Amazon? Or so do we see a change? Is there some research that's gone into this?
No, because sadly speaking, in India, a lot of research, and I'm not referring to Pehle India specifically, a lot of research is the same story, you know, of a blind people trying to describe what an elephant is. You pick up a tail and then you draw conclusions of that. You pick up a trunk and you draw some conclusions from there. Unfortunately, there is no data which actually looks into the entire ecosystem to actually prove a point. Having said so, there are other ways you can derive some conclusions. So firstly, I'll give you one data point which is not refutable or disputable. Okay. India's merchandise retail market is about $900 billion to $1 trillion.
Okay.
Data is backed by GDP numbers, GST numbers, and so on and so forth. Of this, the most optimistic estimate of e-commerce, ETL I'm talking about, is about $100 billion, say 10%. This is what I just told to you. Is what it is. And the market is growing at maybe 20-25% year on year. Which means e-commerce today, if it is $100 billion, it might become $125 billion next year. However, if we take a conservative real GDP growth rate of 6%, an inflation of 5%, and a depreciation of 2%, because I'm talking in dollars. Nominally, we are still adding roughly about $100 billion of additional consumption in the next 12 months. Additional.
Okay.
Now, of this $100 billion of additional consumption, only 25 will be accounted for by e-commerce, assuming 25% growth. Okay. Modern retail is also no more than 10%. The physical modern retail is not even 10%. So the same logic, if they grow by another 20%, they will take another 20 billion. The balance $50 to $60 billion, where will consumers buy this from? Your mom and pop stores.
There and do you see that continuing? So my next question to you is...
Of course. So any comparison with economies in Europe or USA are misplaced, because there, when the economic growth is about 1% to 2%, aging population and therefore more spending on services, less on merchandise, it becomes a zero-sum game. What it means is that if Amazon were to grow in the USA, somebody has to lose business. In India's case, as long as the economy continues to grow at 6 to 8% per year, and most projections do talk about, including from Government of India, that for next 20 years, we will grow at this pace, and population stabilizing there, we will continue to add $100, $120, $130, $140, $150 billion of additional merchandise consumption. So probably around 2035, this is our company's estimate, around 2035 is the point where the share of modern retail and e-commerce would be such that the growth will still be there in the conventional retail.
Right.
But the but the growth there will be lesser than what the sum total of modern retail would be, right? Now, job losses, now 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, most of the shopkeepers, let's say the minister talked about mobile phone shops are not there.
Yeah.
That does not mean that the people who were selling mobile phones are now lying jobless. There are no empty shops in India anywhere. In fact, you see illegal shops emerging everywhere because we haven't kept pace our urban planning to create more legal physical retail spaces there.
Right.
So there is no empty shops. Unlike UK, when you go to high streets and you see shuttered shops, India doesn't have that. So A, data in terms of broad macroeconomic data doesn't show any stress. B, your physical availability of space, which the small shopkeepers currently own, if there were vacancies, we could see that. That doesn't happen. In fact, rentals keep going up. So I don't think there is any reason to worry as of now. 20 years from now.
But you're saying in 2035, you said in 2035, you see that changing.
Yes. At that time, the share of modern retail could be 20%. The share of e-commerce could be 50% or 40%, like it has happened in other parts of the world. And that is where the growth of conventional mom and pop store will start to slow down. It is growing currently.
Okay. It's still
growing. It is not diminishing. It is growing currently.
Okay. So, you mentioned that we don't see empty shops, but there's so many malls that we go to. In fact, a lot of the malls in the NCR region are lying, completely underutilized. And we see that there's been a decline in the footfall traffic there. So, do you relate that to high real estate costs, or do you relate that to people preferring to buy in urban centers online?
A number of factors, Shweta. It will be very difficult to generalize across the entire universe of malls. I know malls since they have come up in India. The first generation malls which came up in late 90s, Crossword in Bombay is one horrible example, if I use the word. Delhi also had Ansal Plaza, again another horrible example. No disrespect to the people who set those malls up there. Malls have a certain science behind it. A, you don't sell space ever. You always rent it so that some retailers who go out of business, you bring some new ones. You see more powerful brands which the customers want to shop. But if you have sold a shop to somebody, the mall owner or operator has no control of what is being sold. Most of the malls which came up in India, which are lying partly empty or fully empty, badly designed, bad access, no parking, bad zoning, bad tenanting.
So
that is one common factor for majority of the first generation malls, if I say. If you look into success of the malls, I live in Delhi, Gurgaon. Look into ambience in Gurgaon. Look into Select City Walk in Delhi. Look into DLF malls in Vasant Kunj. You can't get even a square foot of space, even if you know Mr. Rajiv Singh, let's say, of DLF or somebody else.
There. Sure.
I think we are probably drawing wrong conclusions from some of the empty malls. They were badly designed malls, and they are being repurposed. They are being repurposed, by the way, more food options as customer wants more food options, more entertainment options.
Got it. So very quickly, my concluding question to you, Mr. Singhal, we do know that there's an e-commerce policy in the works. What would you like to see in the policy?
I would hope that it is actually a very simple policy rather than 200-page policy with 2,000 points and sub-points there. I think common sense should prevail as opposed to vested interest, whatever the vested interest might be. And I talked about the four guardrails. As long as only focus is largely on those four guardrails, again, dominance, consumer data protection, predatory pricing, and no fictitious or duplicate or wrong materials being sold to the customers. As long as these four are being addressed in a pragmatic manner, I don't think we need any more restrictions or constraints.
Okay. While you were talking, it just came to me. Do you think India's e-commerce model is very unique? Because nowhere in the world do you see 10-minute deliveries. Nowhere in the world do you, can you order a one thing, a printout, for instance, online, and it'll get delivered to you within 10 minutes. So this is an innovation that's happened in India, right?
Yeah. It is also to do with the fact that India, in many ways, structurally is fundamentally different to many other countries in the world. For example, we have very, very high population density, which allows deliveries to be done in a very, through a dark store within a 2-kilometer radius. You have a very large number of households, number one. B, in India, modern physical retail never really got a chance to grow. Unlike rest of the world, which had a Walmart supercenter, an Asda in UK, a Tesco supermarket or whatever else. We never had those large places. In India, consumers, therefore, in terms of access and choice, were denied there. The third part is labor. In India, fortunately, we have a very large number of people who do not have jobs. As a result, a gig worker can probably at least be happy to earn 20,000 rupees a month in a bigger city by making 40 deliveries or 30 deliveries there. And therefore, the cost per delivery is very low. So you have high population density, you have very low cost availability of labor, the last mile part of it there. And you also have customers who are denied access from a conventional retail, and therefore they tend to buy more often and more frequently. This is unique to India, and that is the reason the success of quick commerce, compared to USA, where even 30-minute delivery is not viable, despite putting a huge amount of cost of delivery to the customer.
Yeah, because in the US, it's very expensive and people prefer to just drive up and do it. But I think in India, driving to a place is far more daunting a task than just paying that extra
delivery. Yeah, but that's you're talking, Shweta, only for upper income customers to drive. I'm talking about the middle income customers who are stressed for time. They spend a lot of time in metros or buses or public transport, which is the lesser said, the better in most cities. So after working 8-9 hours in the office and 3 hours in commute, where is the time to go to shop?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Singhal, for, defogging this entire e-commerce story for us. So it's not all that bad. However, as India's e-commerce market grows, we need the guardrails in place protecting our data. I think that's number one. That's the most important thing that the new e-commerce policy must address. Thank you very much. And to all our viewers for tuning in, a big thank you. Do send us your thoughts, your feedback, and any questions that you might have for Mr. Singhal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shweta, for having me over.